here's the easy thing with bike advocacy. You're with people that love what they do. They're impassioned by it. They're hard working around it. It's not a job. It's a lifestyle for them.
Well, that's my guest, Jeff Selzer. He's the general manager of Palo Alto Bicycles in Palo Alto, California. And we sat down early one morning just a little over a week ago to talk about Palo Alto, talk about retail sales, Palo Alto being a gold-rated city according to the League of American Bicyclists as they rank bicycle-friendly cities across the country. I've been to Palo Alto Bicycles many, many times. I've had family in Palo Alto, but they all moved away. So this was a chance. I was visiting recently for a financial conference. It brought me back. I made the most of my time in Palo Alto. And you're listening to CDM Cyclist, and I'm your host, Frank Peters. And, well, a special welcome if you've clicked on over from coronadelmartoday.com. Thank you very much for joining me once again. Well, Palo Alto, it's got so much going for it. And yet Jeff and I talk about some of the challenges that the community still faces. Many of them very similar to the kind of challenges you probably recognize in your own city when it comes to bicycle advocacy. Let's listen.
My name is Jeff Selzer. I'm the general manager of Palo Alto Bicycles.
That's terrific. And we're in the store. It's early. Thanks for joining me so early this morning to accommodate my schedule. Thank you. Now, Jeff, two people referred me to you, John Case and Andrea White, both at Bike Station. They didn't know I was each asking the other, but they both were quick to say, go see Jeff. How do you know John and Andrea?
Well, Palo Alto Bicycles was running I believe it was the second bike station that opened in California. We started up here in 1998, and we have been operating the Palo Alto location for Bike Station since then. So there's been a fairly long history. That was prior to Andrea getting in. John had been part of it. He obviously being the founder. But I think it was, probably 4 or 5 years ago that Andrea came on, and they both are incredibly dedicated and hardworking folks. So I give them 99.999% of the credit for having the organization where it is today.
Now, Jeff, as I anticipated coming here and sitting down with you today, I thought not every retailer is an advocate, but you are.
Not every retailer is. They should be. It's, I believe, short-sighted on retailers' parts. The challenge, I think, for most retailers is there's not a line item that you can put into the P&L that at the end of the year you can look at it and say, oh, look how much money I made because I'm a bike advocate. The reality is without it, it won't be too many years and they won't have a P&L. There's constraints on all things in the world. And if you don't look out for your little piece of the world, somebody else is going to take it. So I really do believe this bike advocacy is a core piece of my business, and it should be a core piece of every retailer's business.
Do you think that, just imagining now, for some retailers it's a tough business and they struggle to attend to the store and go to meetings and take on all those responsibilities. Is it a tough business for a lot of retailers?
Yeah. Everybody, it's so funny because whatever business you go into, whatever segment of business you go into, everybody's going to say, well, ours is unique. Ours is different. Let me explain to you why. Cycling retailing is, in its own way, very unique. There are constraints with space. There's challenges with inventory. We've got items much like a car dealership, you know, very high ticket items that take up a lot of space, that turn really slowly.
That would be the bikes themselves.
There's a lot of people in the industry that if they could run a bike shop without bikes, they would like to. And many people have tried. The reality is it's kind of like trying to run a 7-Eleven without milk or beer. You're not going to survive very long. Bikes are what bring people in. The biggest challenge we have, I think, as retailers in the industry is figuring out how to retain enough profit to make it worthwhile for us to keep the businesses open. And I believe that comes with, you know, we were talking about it earlier, all the accessories that are in the store. In my store, 20%, maybe 20, yeah, I'd say just about 20% of my floor space is dedicated to bicycles. That means 80% of my floor space is dedicated to everything else.
And those are higher margin accessories?
Well, not only, yes, they are. They are higher margin, but more importantly, they're items that, you know, if you're going to buy a bicycle, you'll come in once every 3 to 5 years. You may come back every 3 to 4 months to buy, you know, it's summertime, you need a new short sleeve jersey, you need a new pair of gloves. Winter comes along, you know, I need the knicker shorts because my knees are getting colder, I need some arm warmers. You're back season over season over season to buy things. And inevitably, if you buy one, oh, you know what, I need new tubes. Maybe a new tire. Oh, look at those sunglasses. I got to get those. So it builds on itself. It kind of cascades.
So, like, the climate here is a bigger advantage for you, I'm imagining now, than, say, in Southern California where I am, where it's more uniform all year round. I know one of your salespeople was showing me a pair of long finger gloves the other day that the time I passed and this morning, I'm not leaving without them, Jeff.
Well, you know, it's funny because I'm in a group called the P2 Group, which is Profitability Squared. We're 20 bike dealers that get together twice a year. We're from all over the U.S. We always meet where one of us has a store. And your comment about our weather here versus Southern California, I chuckle about that because at one of the very first meetings we had, I was complaining about, you know, how much we slow down during the winter and, you know, we just don't do as much business. And a couple of the retailers there are from the Midwest, you know, the Northeast, and they literally just guffawed at me because their delta between their best month and their worst month may be at 18 to 20 times the delta. For me, my best to worst is one half. They're, you know, 18, I've got one half.
No sympathy for you, huh?
None, absolutely none. The interesting thing is in all of these different markets, we are all very successful. So the business, whether you're in a area where you get, you know, 12 feet of snow at the dead of winter, or Southern California, where you really have very little change in the weather, if you understand your client, if you understand your business, this is a good business to be in. The best part of this business is we get to help people. We get to help people like yourself. You know, they want to get healthier. They're like, you know, I need a lifestyle change and running's too hard, going to the gym, I don't want to do that. Get them on a bike, a little wind in their face, and they're outdoors and it's fresh air, they're smiling, they feel like a kid again.
You know, that makes me think. I came in a couple of days ago and I saw one of your salespeople. He was busy, but I recognized him right away. And I instantly flashed back the first time I had met him. I was inquiring about, hey, what's a good ride? And he pointed me to the Sandhill Loop. And so I went back, checked it out, and then fast forward all the way. Just yesterday, I'm here for a financial conference. I led a very small group, but enthusiastic, on the Sandhill Loop. And, you know, to be able to share that, pass it forward, I guess. So when you do things like that, that's a kind of like a bonding experience, I feel, when I come in here. So I'm tickled about that. Now, one thing that's got to be good for business, Jeff, is being in Palo Alto. It's a gold level city, is rated by the league. You've got a lot of cyclists here. Business has improved or kind of tracked the bicycle community itself.
Absolutely. You know, we're the advantage we've got is this is our 81st year in business. So we were.
You don't look that old, Jeff.
We were established in 1930. The family that owned it then still owns it today. Their grandfather started it. They ran it for a number of years, and now they're both mostly retired. So we've got a bit of an advantage in downtown Palo Alto just because we've been here for so long. The interesting thing is because it is such a cycling mecca, there's you can throw a baseball and hit about 10 shops from my shop. A lot of competition. It's interesting that I think is very good. And oftentimes I'll have advertisers or somebody come in and say, well, you know, what do you need to do to beat the other bike shops in the area, you know, your competition? And my comment always is my competition isn't another bike shop. My competition is Apple. My competition is a big screen TV. My competition is a new car or a new washing machine. I'm fighting for disposable income. If a customer goes to another shop and buys a bike, I still win. They still may walk in here and buy a pair of shorts, a pair of gloves, a tube. I don't care what it is. They're a cyclist. At least I've got a shot at that consumer. If somebody's sitting in front of a TV, eating chips, drinking beer, watching a football game, odds are I've lost that guy.
Apple's going to be a tough competitor.
You know, it's funny. It is a tough competitor. And you know, we recently lost Steve Jobs, which is, you know, a blow to, I think, just millions of people across the country. For us, it was personal. He was a customer of ours and a remarkably genuine man. You know, he'd come in, he'd talk about family, he'd talk about you know, running a business. And at one point I was standing out front talking to him and just explaining how, or actually asking, how can you run such a global, you know, this is a massive thing. And he stood there for a minute, kind of looked at the shop. He said, you know, it's no different than what you do. And I, you know, inside I'm just laughing going, yeah, right. But he, you know, he really made a case. He said, you know, you run a business and you've got certain responsibilities. You make sure that you've got people that can, you know, do the jobs that need to be done and you track their progress. He said, that's what I do. A very gracious man.
So it's all relative, I guess, is one thought there.
Yeah, very much.
Right. Let's talk about advocacy in Palo Alto. It's coming from Southern California, my community just beginning to focus on bicycle safety. Started a committee, city formed a committee a couple of years ago, bringing people together. That all happened quite a while ago, or what were some of the ingredients, Jeff, that made Palo Alto really surge in terms of advocacy and safety?
Well, you know, we've got a number of leaders in the area that you know, back in the mid to late 60s, we had people that were very focused on bike advocacy, which is unusual. That was certainly not the norm at the time. Since then, that legacy has continued on. This year, 2011, for the city of Palo Alto, was the year of the bike. The mayor, you know, as he came on, he said, this is going to be one of my focuses this year, is to focus on the bicycle. So it's interesting. Over the course of that 30, 40 years of people being active and wanting safe routes for people to ride, it has made our community, like you said, a gold medal bike-friendly community. Interestingly enough, it's good timing on this. I came last night. We had the Silicon Valley Bike Coalition is our local bike coalition, and we had our annual fundraising dinner last night, and it was a wild success. Sold out the entire venue, And the group, the small group that is Silicon Valley Bike Coalition, incredibly hardworking folks. For a staff of four or five people, they do what 25 people in most organizations get done. They're just the nice thing about here's the easy thing with bike advocacy. You're with people that love what they do. They're impassioned by it. They're hardworking around it. It's not a job. It's a lifestyle for them.
I can picture up here in the Silicon Valley, you'd attract very dedicated and talented people to a cause like that. Yeah, that would be a great advantage for you too. Well, how about let's get to know Jeff the man a little bit. You've been riding your whole life, or?
Yeah, you know, it's funny. I've been an athlete most of my life. And when I say an athlete, I mean very much an amateur athlete. I played sports as a kid in high school, and for years I ran. And I ran just because when I was in college, it was inexpensive. All I needed was a pair of shoes and a pair of shorts. And I had a friend that said, you know, you should try taking up cycling. And I rode a bike as a kid. I got a car. What do I need a bike for? He got me into a nice bike. He said, you know, come on, I've got an extra bike. Let's go for a ride. And I was sold. Actually, the first ride that I took with him, it was a loop. And I was going to school in San Luis Obispo. And I beat him back on that loop by about 25 minutes. And he considered himself a pretty strong rider. So he's like, you got to get on a bike. You got to get on a bike. And so I started riding while I was down there and raced collegiates and got into USCF racing. And, you know, that was 30 some odd years ago, 25 years ago, and have never looked back. I'll probably die on a bike sometime.
Worse ways to go, huh?
Yes.
Now, I just recently did the math. In my case, I was in Eugene, Oregon in 1972. That was a boom year in bicycling, and what a thrill to be there at the U of O. But then I went to UCLA for graduate school, and definitely I got spooked, you know, in the big city riding a bike. I just did the math. I put down the bicycle for 34 years. Wow. Oh, boy. So you can imagine, I'm flipped out having found my way back to the bicycle. And I've been in a lot of bike stores, and just the past couple of years I bought four different bikes, trying to figure out just what kind of a cyclist I am. And I think the question is still open. How about here locally? Are there trends? Are you still selling a lot of like road bikes for wannabe racers? Or is lifestyle cycling kind of becoming? What are some of the trends you see, Jeff?
Well, you know, it's funny because it has ebbed and flowed a bit. But over the last probably, I'm going to say 2-3 years. It has really started to meld a little bit. You know, we do sell a lot of like single speed or three speed kind of just around town bikes. Tons of those. We sell a bunch of hybrid. You know, just the basic kind of halfway between a mountain bike and a road bike. That's probably our biggest selling units in the store. High-end and mid-range road bikes are on fire this year. We have done incredibly well with that. And just recently, over the last couple of years, the 29er mountain bike, which is the bigger wheeled mountain bike, has become quite popular, and we're seeing a huge increase in the number of units being sold in that area. So really, the thing that I love about this is over the last few years, all segments of the industry have been, you know, all ships have been rising. There's a couple of things that I attribute that to. We've kind of got a perfect storm going on. Environment has obviously become forefront for a lot of folks. So they're wanting to do something that's better than getting in their, you know, big SUV to go two blocks down the road to drop the kids off and then a block back to the post office and then home. They're recognizing we can make those little trips on our bike. Health is a big piece of it. You know, obesity in America is at an all-time high. And literally just doing, even somebody that is, I've had people that have come in that are well over 300 pounds, buy a bike from me, and in 2 years I see them again and they're down to about 180. You know, that's somebody that has lost a person and a half, and they have, you know, literally turned their lives around. That's not to say that you have to be thin to be happy. You don't. But you have to be comfortable in your body, in your experience. And if you're not, cycling is a great way to get there. It's low impact, high cardiovascular. It's just a very easy way to do it. The third piece, and I think a very significant piece right now, is it's an inexpensive way to get around. So, you know, you buy a bike, and they're not inexpensive initially, but once you've purchased it, keeping that on the road, specifically when compared to a car, is pennies on the dollar at best. So if you take the fact that we've got all three of these factors coming together, and none of those three factors is just going to go away, I think we're really in a position as an industry to continue to drive a lot of people in our doors.
Talk about the cost of maintaining your bicycle. I've been keeping track lately. Since August, I've spent $4,000 maintaining my car. All just simple little, no major thing, just, you know, $1,000 here or there. Every time I come back from the shop, I make a point of telling my 16-year-old, who's infatuated with, you know, his first car, about that, trying to convey to him, you know, the economics of the bicycle. But, of course, he doesn't listen. He's got dreams. How about now, you've seen trends in the bicycle industry in the past, Jeff. Any concerns that this little boomlet that we're going through right now is going to be just part of a cycle or going to keep going?
You know, that's a good question. And I lie awake at nights often thinking about it. You know, my worry is never the next 6 to 18 months. My worry is the next 3 to 5 years. And am I going to be able to stay far enough ahead of that curve to understand what the market wants, at least in our little segment of it, to stay relevant? And to more directly answer that question, I would say I'm worrying less these days than I have in the past. Again, because of those three reasons that I just stated. You know, historically, like you had mentioned earlier, in the early 70s, big boon for bicycle. And part of the reason it was a big boon, they had the gas embargoes, you know, big long lines. This shop, at that time, we couldn't build the bikes fast enough. Literally, we've got about a 18-foot ceiling. We had like 4 rows deep of bikes from floor to ceiling in boxes to be built. And as fast as we could build them, we'd put them up front and somebody would buy it and it would go out the door. I mean, we could not build them fast enough. The problem was, once gas prices came back down, that dried up. It was gone, and then when they were back to, okay, now what are we going to do with all these bikes? I'm not seeing that in this trend. Again, it's much stickier this time. It is not something, you know, the environment isn't going to just overnight change and be better. Obesity, you know, it takes years to stem that tide. And once you've stemmed it, now you have to stay diligently on top of it. So that I don't see as changing quickly. And then certainly we are not going to see the price of gas, the price of goods, anything like that, take a nosedive and come dramatically down in price. Things are getting more expensive. So if you can find an economical, an efficient way to get around that's actually fun, why wouldn't you do it?
That is the perfect storm, isn't it? Yeah. Jeff, how about Palo Alto? It's a gold-level city. It's got so much going for it. I'm sure there are challenges, too. What are some of the thoughts on your mind? What are some of the challenges or opportunities ahead for the city as you see it?
Well, absolutely. I mean, even for gold-level and platinum-level cities, there are still challenges. And you know, our biggest challenge is just the sheer volume of people. University Avenue, which is the street that's right in front of our front door, you get here on a Monday, Tuesday, it doesn't matter, any day during the week, hit about 3 o'clock in the afternoon, bumper to bumper traffic for about the 2.5-3 miles, both directions from Stanford to Highway 101.
I was in that traffic the other day. Yeah,
it's infuriating. You move 3 feet and then you stop and wait. Then you move another foot and you stop and wait.
Made me wish I had come by bike.
Well, and there's the opportunity. The challenge is when you've got that much traffic, as a bike advocate, when I say let's take out some parking, let's, you know, narrow the roads a little bit and put some bike lanes in, the folks that are in those cars that aren't cyclists and aren't going to be cyclists are saying, wait, we're already in a traffic jam and we do this every single day. We hate it. You know, we don't want to give any of this up. The challenge lies in educating both the city and the folks that are driving back and forth. If they realize that there is probably 25% of those folks that are in the car, that if it were safe, if it were convenient, and if they had the resources to be able to get on a bike, they'd get out of the car. Now you'd have 25% less cars out there. You'd have less traffic.
But that's a leap of faith, isn't it? Or it's not an easy argument to make sometimes with whether it's the parking place in front of a merchant or the motorist himself. There's resistance to change is the business we're both in here, huh?
Absolutely. And it is a huge leap of faith. But, you know, I just read in the, we get the New York Times at home, and I just read the other day that the couple that own the Iowa farm that they made into a baseball diamond for the Field of Dreams Kevin Costner movie years ago, they're selling it. And they're getting a huge top dollar for it. It is an iconic place. And I use that very much as an example. I was a kid that grew up, I was born in Iowa. So anybody had told me as a kid, we're going to take this field, turn it into a baseball diamond, and it's going to be, people will drive thousands of miles to come and see your baseball diamond in a cornfield. I would have said, yeah, right.
That's a leap of faith.
That is a huge leap of faith. But again, you know, the comment that, you know, often is used, if you build it, they will come. The number one complaint that I have from my customers, I'm afraid. I am afraid to get on a bike. If you can stem that fear, right now in Palo Alto, I think we get 4% of our population that rides. Nationwide, it's like 1.5% that you know, commute or use a bike regularly for errands. If you could increase that to 5%, that is an, I mean, for our industry alone, that's a, you know, billions and billions of dollars that comes into our industry. Beyond that, what it does for our communities, it makes them much more enjoyable to be in. You can walk downtown. You don't have big cars going by. You're not worried about your kids getting hit when they're going to school because there's not as many cars around. There's huge, huge, huge opportunities out there.
Now, when you mentioned the New York Times, so many times I turn to the paper and there are more and more stories of people riding bikes, touring, bicycle improvements happening in the city. It really is quite a time right now, isn't it?
Absolutely. And I, you know, here again, the times are so unique right now. Who would have thought 30 years ago that New York City was going to be a city that would be driving to the degree that they are? Bike advocacy. Every year I go back to D.C., Washington, D.C., and they have a bike summit back there. We go up onto Washington or up onto Capitol Hill and lobby for cycling specific issues. And last year we had the director of transportation from New York come out and do a talk. And the woman was absolutely wonderful. I mean, just yes. Yep. She was a very diligent or very hardworking advocate for cycling. And that wasn't her only job, but she recognized the value of that. Again, you know, 30 years ago, you wouldn't walk downtown because it was like, oh my God, I'm going to get hit by a car. Today, it's a very different beast.
That's exciting. Well, Jeff, it's been a real pleasure sitting down with you today. I told you when you let me in the front door, I've been a customer for years. I was doubly excited to meet you, to be referred by Andrea and John. Thank you so much for sitting down with me this morning.
My pleasure, Frank. It was nice meeting you.
Good.
Enjoyed it very much.
Yeah, that's fun.
Well, we're back in the studio, and well, after listening to Jeff, does it prompt a few thoughts? If so, would you come by the website, cdmcyclist.com, and leave a comment behind? Both Jeff and I would love to hear your reaction to today's show. Well, that wraps up our time together today. Thanks so much for listening, and good night.